been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Row. I've been there. K-Row.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to the Hashtag MoEdge Podcast. We are broadcasting live from the state capitol, joined again by 2016 podcast co-host of the year, Becky Lohman. Becky, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Busy week?
Really busy week. It's crazy. I can't believe it's 5 o'clock on a Wednesday.
It's kind of when the big bills get...
Right?
I'm not even sure anymore. It's kind of funny when the big bills get going, there's like actual legislation for real things that start. And
yeah.
It seems like that's
some people actually
week.
Work. Sometimes.
Yes, and we are very glad to be broadcasting from the office of one of the senators that does do a lot of the real legislating, Ryan Silvey, senator from Clay County. Glad to thank you for hosting us here in your office.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
One of the coolest offices in the.
It is a really
in the Capitol. That needs to be said.
Yes.
I will say that confidently. Probably the coolest office in the Capitol.
Yeah, come to our webpage and we will post some photographs of this office. It is very well done. I mean, if there could not be a better office using the second greatest baseball franchise in the state of Missouri as a team.
The most recent world champion.
There you go.
Oh, man.
I loved your stat. What was it? The Cardinals haven't won a World Series in now 84 months?
Yeah, getting close.
Getting close. Yeah, yeah. That was a legit stat.
Something like that. No, I tried to make my office someplace that I would love to come to work to every day. So, you know, when I was a lowly house member and looked like I was 16, I had pictures of, you know, me shaking hands with important people and bills on the wall. But when I moved here, I was like, you know, what would high school me want to come to work to if I could just do it? So baseball, guitars, Star Wars, and video.
Check this out tomorrow and you're going to be like, gosh dang it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm term limited, so I'm fully aware of school, so I figured I better take advantage
of
it
while now. You can.
I don't know. I mean, that mural's pretty legit. The real ID debate. Can you give, like, what would a... Can you explain to, like, a regular person what the hell that...
All state driver's licenses to be up to a certain standard. And Missouri, in 2000, a law that said our Department of Revenue can't offer those licenses up to that standard. So, you know, time goes along, federal government starts, you know, requiring those types of licenses for more and more things. January of next year, you won't be able to get on an airplane, even to fly domestically, unless you have some sort of federally compliant identification, which, since our driver's license doesn't work, means you'll have to get a passport.
So,
and I think it's stupid.
If somebody from Kansas City wanted to fly over and see the Cardinals, they'd
right.
still have to have their passport?
They would have to have a passport if we don't provide an option. So
what other states aren't real ID compliant besides Missouri?
You know, there's five that haven't.
There's just five?
That,
just
yeah.
Five.
45 states have come on board since 2005. And I can't remember exactly, which I think it's like Minnesota, Maine, Washington, us, and mm-hmm. it seems like somebody else, but...
That's kind of an odd group of states.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. I mean, at the beginning, though, a bunch of states pushed back and said, we're not going to do it. We mm-hmm. think it's overreach. But then...
Do you think it's a good idea for the federal government to pass a law in the first place?
You know, I don't have that big of a problem with it. I mean, Todd Akin voted for the thing. Like,
that's not necessarily the best argument. I don't think that...
Yeah, but I don't think you can say it wasn't conservative. I mean...
There's a lot of things people say are conservative that are really stupid, though. I mean, well, you know, it's a... I always think it's interesting when Republicans are in charge, lots of things are conservative. If it's a bad idea, you just call it conservative, right?
Yeah, but so the reason that they did it, though, it was a recommendation of the 9/11 Commission,
mm-hmm.
right? So several of the hijackers had dual licenses that they fraudulently got from New Jersey and Virginia. So the 9/11 Commission looked at that and said, well, because there isn't a uniform standard of what it takes to get a license, we have a situation where people can go get licenses in multiple states and then blow up an airplane. And that's not cool. So let's figure out a way to make it harder to do that. And that's what they came up with.
So your bill basically said if you go to the DMV, you can choose to get a real ID and you can board planes with it, or you can choose to get a non-real ID and you can't board an airplane.
Right. So that's all I'm trying to say is, and this
give
is
people
the
choice.
Right. And in 2009, I actually had this language on the bill that we passed, and it was stripped off on the House floor. So
could've
I just
with it so many years ago.
Yeah, I just think that people know what's best for themselves.
So right. we're having this discussion at the end of February. There were some folks that were discussing it. It sounded like around the chamber putting this off till after spring break, which I think spring break's the week after St. Patty's Day. You could tell I chart my year by different drinking holidays. But so they were thinking in a month there might be some waiver from the Trump administration.
You know, Senator Krause is leading the opposition to, yeah. to my bill, and he is of the opinion that we should buy some time for the feds to decide if they want to repeal
this. Do you have
this.
A problem with that?
No, I mean, I'm willing to, you know, the session doesn't get out until May,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
As long as we can leave here in May, and I know that my constituents are not going to be inconvenienced without having a say in the matter, I'm fine with it. So if we need to delay this for a few weeks while Senator Krause and I work on language that he's okay with, I'm fine with it. But I will also say that I don't think there's any way that the federal government's going to repeal this bill. I mean, I see zero reason to think that the Trump administration is going to loosen identification requirements on people.
I'm kind of there's very few things this president has done that would make you think if the choice is security or not, he's going to err on the side of taking a chance. I mean, if the argument is this enhances security, I don't know that it's realistic to think that this administration is going to go the opposite way.
No, I agree 100%. In fact, when General Mattis was going through his confirmation, he was asked about it. And at no point did he say, oh, I think we should, you know, maybe reconsider this or look at it. He said, I want to work with the remaining states to find a way to help them comply.
So. Interesting. So what else are you working on this year?
You know, I'm always really deep in the appropriations process, mm-hmm. So continuing to work on that. And then, you know, I've kind of just been ad hoc finding things to get involved in.
It's kind of depressing, I would think, this should be in the budget process. Like, people just come up and you say, no, we can't help you. No, we can't help you.
You know, it's not a situation that I'm unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was chair in the House of the Budget Committee, we had to cut like $1 billion. You know, this year we have to cut like 400 and... You know,
is that, you think, the real number? We've heard numbers that ranging from 200 to 700.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably closer to 400.
Yeah.
You know, so it's doable. I mean, it sucks. I mean, telling people no sucks. But,
yeah.
You know, we have to live within our means. And, you know, we don't get to deficit spend on programs like Washington does.
On this week in Missouri Politics, Senator Igel laid out a plan to basically zero-base budget and put all the new money into highways. Is that practical?
You know, I haven't seen Senator Igel's plan yet. I mean, I'm aware he unveiled. I think he introduced it today during introduction of bills. You know, I think that we need to have a long-term transportation plan. That's something I've talked about for a long time. From what I've heard of his plan, there seem to be similarities to the plan that I've offered as far as, you know, returning some local control on some of these roads that were taken over in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But as far as the budget side of it, I'm unfamiliar with what exactly he's proposing yet. I haven't seen it.
Essentially, he just wants to take all the new money the state gets and cap everything and put that money into highways and car their stuff. I wonder how...
I mean,
can you really...
Off the top,
let me just ask you this question. I mean, when you think of people that are serious policymakers, you're somebody that actually seriously makes policy. Do you believe MoDOT has a funding problem, that they don't have enough money to build new roads and keep what they have?
I think MoDOT has a funding problem because they have too many roads. That's
but
my opinion.
At their current level of roads, can you maintain them and build new infrastructure without a substantial money increase from somewhere?
I don't think so.
I think that's I think people that think that they could somehow figure it out later I just don't think serious people. I don't hear serious people saying that.
Yeah, no, I don't think that that's realistic. I think that we have too much pavement that is state maintained. Right? I mean, over the years, MoDOT has taken control of what used to be county roads in most of this state. And we have, I'm drawing a blank on how many thousands of miles. Most states most states are like 8,000 to 12,000 miles.
Lettered highways for the most part, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Most states have like 8,000 to 12,000 miles that are similar size or population. I think we're at like 30-some thousand miles.
I think it was 31 the last time I looked.
Yeah, so... We always look at the side.
Executive producer Ben Peters with a nice stat drop there. Quality. Well, no, I don't fact check, so I mean it's...
No, we just roll with it.
Yeah.
Throw it out there, it's good.
I mean, we always look at the side of we don't have enough money, so let's raise a tax or let's implement a toll. We never look at the other side of the ledger, which is what are we taking care of and is it appropriate? And I tend to think that we've gone into the inappropriate territory.
So But is it realistic for a legislature dominated by rural politics? I mean, these county roads are mostly in rural areas of the state. Is it politically possible for a legislature dominated by rural legislators to overturn and hand this prize back to the?
You know, it's a conundrum because you know, everybody's for smaller government unless it's their government, right? You know, and that's what I find talking to a lot of rural legislators. They're afraid, you know.
Well, this is who's going to pay for the government. Everybody wants the road. This is who's going to pay for the road.
Right, right. Which right now, Kansas City and St. Louis are paying for the roads, I mean, for the most part. So, you know, I think that it needs to be a comprehensive plan. I don't think it's as cut and dry as saying, you know what, counties used to take care of these roads. Here, you can have them back. I don't think that's going to work. You'll never get the votes for that for the reasons that you just laid out. I do think that that the plan that I've come up with is a little more nuanced and thought out in that arena. In that we don't just throw them all back. We give them 2/3 of their current funding for those roads, but we let the localities control how that money is spent. So we're going to save 1/3 of what we currently spend on those roads, but they're going to get more flexibility. It's a trade-off. Like, we're not going to maintain everything for you. Here's most of what you get now. Now you figure out how to deal with it. And I think that, you know, as people become educated on how it works, what kind of flexibility it would give them for regional, you know, cooperation and stuff, I think that maybe we could get there. It's not going to happen in a year. But yeah. I think that over time, I think people could get comfortable with a plan like that.
Do you think if the right plan was put to the voters, they would pass, they would tax themselves to build roads in Missouri?
Not anytime soon. I mean, that's the struggle that we've had, right? I mean, what drove me to come up with any kind of transportation plan is that our only answer has been, well, let's put this tax out. And then the voters go, nope. And then
but don't you think the governor sort of tanked the last one? Did you think it got a fair hearing the way it was handled by Governor Nixon?
Well, he certainly didn't help. But I mean, but at the end of the day, you put up a tax, it fails. You come back next year and go, oh, we don't have enough revenue. Let's put up a tax, and it fails. Like, you can keep doing it and not get any solutions, or you can come up with a different solution. And I'm not saying they're mutually exclusive. Maybe we raise a tax and we figure out how to pare down the road system. Maybe that's the answer. But just continuing to put a tax increase on the ballot is not going to work.
Interesting. I couple of things really quickly just to wrap up. I was interested to see that you've been someone that has a thoughtful position on right to work. Do you think that some of your colleagues may, let's say there's not a great amount of jobs that comes. I mean, I already see the Democrats figuring out ways to message and says, well, why do we need this law? You passed right to work. Everything's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. Do you think your party may be a little short-sighted in how they made this a priority before some of the things that these, if you want cheaper, dumber, lazier workers, you can pay less, you still could go to Kansas or Oklahoma or Arkansas?
Yeah, look, I've never been a supporter of this policy primarily because it allows people to take advantage of something they didn't pay for, right? You still get the representation of the bargaining unit, but you don't have to pay your dues. Like, I'm not okay with freeloading, essentially.
Yeah.
So I've never been okay with that. I do think that the party has missed a huge opportunity. I mean, as you know, I represent the Ford plant in Clay Como. I've got 8,000 UAW workers with jobs in my district there. There's a large amount of union families in my district. When I talk to these people, I go door to door. They are, for the most part, conservative people. They like their guns. They don't like their taxes going up. They want government to leave them alone. They are ripe for Republicans if we would just respect and understand that they fear that we're going to take their jobs. Because at the end of the day, if you have to choose between whether you think someone's going to take your job or whether you think that, you know, that you agree with them on some other issues, they're all going to vote on their job. And that's what happens. Like, I think our party should have done greater outreach to the organized labor households as opposed to just trying to cut them off.
Interesting. We are joined here by Senator Ryan Silvey. We're broadcasting live from the state capitol. I want to thank our sponsors, Republic Services and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. I'm going to start with a couple predictions here. So the Paycheck Protection Bill is moving through the legislature. It came out of the House very different than it has every other time. This time, the cops and firefighters are in the bill. And the cops and firefighters are not, they're not happy about it. They've been up here pretty aggressively saying, wait a minute, you've opted us out every time, why not this time? Do you think that actually comes through the Senate with the cops and firefighters hit?
I mean, it's going to be a legit debate. mean, you know, I've always voted to carve them out. Of course, I don't vote for the bill anyway. But,
Make a bad bill. But
you know, those guys do so much for our community. If they want to be opted out, I think they should be opted out. And if I think there's a pretty good group of senators that'll fight to get them back out.
Becky, if you have a right to work, you have to voluntarily join a union anyway. Police and firefighters have always had to voluntarily join their union.
Right, they're already
so
right to work.
It, what does it matter except you're kind of harassing people once a year? I mean, public colleges don't have to confirm every year to take $20 to give to SEMO or whatever. I mean, that's a public thing. It seems like you're singling out folks that maybe you're the government's harassing people at this point.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. All these labor issues are political retribution. Yeah. Like, at the heart. It's the fact that unions support Democrats, Republicans have supermajorities, therefore we're going to gut the people who don't support us. And that's that's the way it is. So they're going to go after the union.
Let me put devil's advocate for a second. Do you believe there's a site locator out there that truly will not consider Missouri because they're not right to work? Do you believe there's some truth to that?
You know, every site locator that I've ever talked to, heard about, whatever, it might be on the list, but it's not at the top of the list. It's way down on the list. You know,
it's one of many things.
Yeah, I mean, what you do hear him talk about is infrastructure, education,
workforce development funding.
Every job creator that I've ever talked to at a chamber of commerce or, you know, in a boardroom, it's all about workforce development.
Mm-hmm.
That is what creates jobs.
That might be one of the boxes we check right to work, but Alabama does $100 million a year in workforce development funding. I think Missouri does $5 million.
Hey, so we
can check the right to work box, and then we're going to go down the list and, you know, we'll lose in those areas.
Look, if right to work was a silver bullet, Boeing would be in South Carolina right now instead of back in Seattle. I mean, we had that special session when they were going to leave Seattle because they were fighting with their union, so they started shopping. And they could have gone. We had a package put together. South Carolina, which is right to work, had a package put together, and I think one other state had a package put together. And at the end of the day, they didn't go to South Carolina. That's right to work. They went right back to the union that they were arguing with in the first place. So I just don't see it being the silver bullet that we're told it is.
Do you think this new bathroom bill becomes the SGR 39 of this year?
I sure hope not.
Blows out.
I sure hope not. I don't. I'll be surprised if it comes to the Senate floor.
Really?
I mean, so it was heard in committee this week. There's 75 bills on Senate perfection calendar. Like, to blow through 75 bills just to get to that debate, I'd be shocked.
Well, the Senate calendars ran a little different this week than it was last week, it seems like. Seems like a lot of bills from chairman are now pretty well placed on as they get turned in.
No, they still have to go in order. They still have to go in order.
So the way you think that if it's not on the Senate calendar now, it has a little. What if it's a House bill?
Well, that's a different calendar.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you think it comes over as a House bill?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything out of the House on this issue. I'm not aware of one moving in the House.
It feels to me like there's more pragmatic senators that are kind of just growing me to talk about this sort of stuff. There's leadership that goes ugh, but there's always a few members in their caucus. They have a hard time basically talking out of pushing this, and then it starts to pick up steam. Is that your sense? I mean, I sense the most of the caucus in the House does not want to deal with this type of stuff, but it's hard to say no to some of the more extreme folks that this is their top priority.
Yeah, I mean, I don't envy Speaker Richardson. You know, just something I've noticed over the years, when I was elected to the House, I was number 90, I think, and it was the most Republicans we'd ever had in the history of the state. I was like the top, you know, highest Republican. Now they're at, what, 120-ish?
17.
117.
Yeah.
From my observation, it was much easier to run the caucus when it was smaller. And the bigger the caucus gets...
Well, there's a wider range of Republicans.
You get
more personality.
I'm glad I'm not speaking
for the House, so you can say that. Room for people to feel attention. Chairmanships are rare. It's just more
You add an extra 30 people, you don't have buy-in because you don't have... There's not enough to do for 170 people to feel important.
Right.
Well, you know, when I was first elected over there, there were a handful of us that took swing districts away from Democrats. Mm-hmm. And we were, like, protected like little baby birds in a hand. Like, oh my gosh, we can't lose these seats. Now, with 117, we're seen as, you know, you're not pure enough. We don't need you anymore. Like, quit being a problem. Like, that's totally how the pendulum has swung. So I would not want to try to run that big of a caucus.
Last prediction. Donald Trump, obviously pretty volatile president, maybe the most volatile president we've ever had. You think that that is Missouri as Republican as the General Assembly makeup is now, and is his presidency maybe a thing that I know a lot of Republican consultants think they're very smart, and they are, but they had Barack Obama in the White House. Now they have Donald Trump. Changes the dynamic, looks to me like.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't think that the state of Missouri is as Republican as the General Assembly. I don't. I think that we've done very well over the last several cycles of taking away swing districts and shrinking the turf that the Democrats have to defend. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the party fares now that we have all three branches of state government, or not branches like the court, but, you know, House, Senate, and governor, and a Republican president. You know, when you look around the country, that just leads to infighting, because there's no point in fighting Democrats right now in the General Assembly, right? You only fight other Republicans.
Well, speaking of fighting, now it's time for five questions, our hashtag Bullheads podcast tradition. I think this has potential to be the best one we've done. We might get the best answers from Senator Sylvie.
I think so. I think we'll get honest answers.
Yeah.
I don't know what five questions is. Should I be scared about this?
Probably, but we've got the live mic, so we're hoping you just don't leave. That's why we don't tell you until the end.
We're
just hope you don't head out.
So five questions for Senator Sylvie. Favorite Royals player of all time?
Dan Quisenberry. Hands down.
That's solid.
Give me
play.
Some contact. I have zero clue about Royals. But
relief pitcher, sidearm hurler.
Oh, wow. Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was.
I have tried to, you know, gin up a public social media campaign for years to get them to retire the number 29 for Dan Quisenberry. So, my little plug, retire 29.
You can sign me up on that one, too.
Was he always a sidearmer?
No.
Or did he? I heard he adapted. Yeah.
He adapted. In college. He became a sidearmer because he didn't have a dominant fastball.
Wow. I mean, so. You could see the movement, even on those old 80s kind of grainy TV. I mean, the sidearm movement was insane.
Yeah.
This is fascinating, guys, but I'm going to move on to the second question. second question. What is your favorite memory as a legislator, House or Senate?
Ooh,
that is a good question.
Thanks. Thought of it all by myself.
You know, so I think I used to have a good time with my friend Mike Cowboy in the House. He was the minority leader in the House. He's from Kansas City, still a very close friend of mine I talk to a lot. We would at least once a year orchestrate a just knockdown, drag out fight on the floor. Like, not physical fight. Like
bare knuckle.
Like, I would inquire of him or he would inquire of me on some issue and we would just scream at each other. Like, you know, like we hated each other's guts and then we would go back in the back and laugh about it.
So when you said you were trying to provide liberty for your constituents, and Senator Krause said he wants to provide liberty for his constituents, was that like an inside game too, or is that just happened to be funny?
No, I think it's funny. I want to know how you're giving me liberty by limiting my choices. That's what I want to know.
Mic drop.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's
that was not orchestrated.
It's a selfish choice. I hate the government, and I wish they didn't even know my name. But I like riding on planes. So, and I'm probably petty, so I probably want to ride on planes, you know?
You want to ride on planes?
Yeah, probably wins out.
That's a reasonable request. Question three. What is Senator Sylvie afraid of?
Ooh, I hate spiders.
And the cold. And snakes?
And the cold. I don't mind snakes. I actually owned a snake for a while.
You hate the cold. Are you afraid of the cold?
Yeah, I'm taking a couple of snakes.
You're afraid of the cold. What's that Fawn afraid of?
My wife didn't like the snakes.
Snakes and people that
own
snakes.
Yeah, the government coming to get
yes.
you?
Yeah.
Government snakes.
That's reasonable.
Government snakes on a plane.
Government snakes. You know, I'm afraid of heights. Weirdly afraid.
I don't like heights either.
I prefer to be on the ground. That's my preference. Okay. Question four. This stumped Representative Ross last week. Who is your favorite member of the General Assembly?
My favorite member of the General Assembly right now? It's Jason Holzman. Hands down.
Dude, when you had a snake though. I always picture little snakes like having it in an aquarium and like a waterbed and like an AC/DC blaring loud. And how did you own a snake?
I just thought it was a neat animal.
Why don't you have a snake in here? This is your 16-year-old self's favorite,
let's
right?
Let's not get crazy here.
I think part of it was I used to be afraid of snakes, and I thought that it would help me conquer my fear if I had one. And so I got one for a while, and now I'm not afraid of snakes anymore.
Profile and courage.
I haven't done that with a spider, though. Like, you won't see me getting like a tarantula.
Let's get a non-Holzman answer, though, for real. Back to the favorite legislator.
But, I mean, we hang out. Like, we're
like second favorite.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Second favorite. I really like Wayne Wallingford.
Yeah. His resume is amazing.
He's a good dude. He's interesting. Like when you talk to him, I mean,
he's thoughtful. I think he's
Yeah, I mean, and you know, when he says something, he means it, and you know, there's no reason to question it.
I see. We did this week in Missouri Politics from Kansas City, and I don't. I think it might have been a coincidence, maybe, but both Representative Carpenter and Corlew were praising your stand on recusals and your stand for the Senate. I don't know why both those guys would be praising you like no other, but maybe it's a coincidence. I don't know.
They're both constituents.
And your term limited when?
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, last question. Who plays you in a movie about Senator Silvey's life?
Macaulay Culkin, obviously.
What?
It's a baby face, right?
Oh, I don't know. Who plays me?
Yeah. Plays you in a movie about your life.
Oh, gosh.
On your time in the legislature, they set up the set just to look like this office.
That's a good question.
I don't know. Maybe Johnny Depp? He's kind of
okay.
Quirky.
He probably owns a snake, too.
Johnny Depp has
got high cheekbones.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure what that means.
I don't either.
I'm self-aware. I have high cheekbones.
Okay.
So is that good?
I don't know if
high
that's good or not.
A good thing.
It seems to have worked out for me.
I feel like better than
I have round cheekbones. I have round cheekbones, I think.
I don't know, but he's kind of quirky, right?
Okay, so
Ed Norton. I'd love Ed Norton to play me, though.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that's... I think that might be... I could see an Ed Norton. We're going to have six questions this time. I have to have your response. There was a lot of work done over in the House. David Willis, the Chief of Staff to Speaker Richardson, they did a ton of research and they uncovered a fact, and I was going to see if we get your reaction to it. So there's a lot of folks, I see the hashtag Forever Royal and all this wonderful Royals gear. There was a license plate that Royals fans could obtain by the state of Missouri. You've probably seen a bunch of Cardinal fan license plates. There's 6 million people in Missouri, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Ben knows the stats. Not one of the 6 million Missourians wanted one for 7 years. It actually got deauthorized. The senator had to go reauthorize the license plate to get one.
Yeah. Going to back-to-back World Series will do that for you, though.
Has there been a big response to that, the 7-year drought of Royals license plates?
No, I think it's quickly been forgotten as there are hundreds of them driving around now.
Maybe even
thousands. I was going to say
hundreds.
I don't know how many.
I think that would be an excellent bet with Senator Sifton or someone or the state treasurer. You could put a bet, and the loser has to take the other one's license plate for their team.
You know, I will say
that'd be high stakes.
I will say after our second consecutive trip to the World Series, I did get it reauthorized, and I had the first set of Royals license plates with my Senate number on them.
It sounds like there wasn't a lot of competition for that first set of Royals license plates.
You know,
you're gonna have to camp outside for that one. They're just like, no, here, Senator, no, here you go.
If seriously, no, I do want to ask you one other question. Seven questions this time.
Does that make it the greatest five questions now that we're at seven?
We're getting pretty close,
yeah,
actually.
That's the record.
So, no kidding. I think it's been good for the state to see the Rams leave because no one cared anyway. But it has been a really cool thing in San Luis. People really get on the Chiefs bandwagon. In Kansas City, do people like that? Is that a positive thing?
That's a good question.
I think you go to St. Louis and the Chiefs are on. That first week, the Cardinals play Sunday Night Baseball. So you go to a bar that afternoon. It's when Alex Smith makes this late drive. They win the game. It's a heck of a game. I saw more and more momentum, more jerseys. I think you have a bar has specials when the Chiefs are on now. It's becoming a bigger deal, and I wonder what the people in Kansas City think, if they even know or they care, they like it.
You know, I think we love it, having more fans in the Chiefs camp.
Yeah.
So it's convenient for you guys, too, because you already have the red stuff.
It works out well, yeah.
It
works out
very well. Fans, you know, could already wear red and fit right in. But no, I think it's great that that more people are becoming fans, we watched the Rams back, you know, when they were good.
Both years.
You watched them. That was great.
Kurt Warner was awesome.
It seemed like a good deal.
Was there a Rams license plate out there that I didn't get my hands on?
God, I can't imagine. I mean, maybe Kurt Warner would have the only one of those, but... I'm glad to see him. I mean, we missed the playoffs last year, which I know that's not going to shock maybe some of your constituents, but the Cardinals don't miss the playoffs, and we don't have time to think about the Rams. They needed to leave. It focuses the community on what's important. My last question for eight questions is, What about a 2% sales tax on the 7-state listing area of KMOX to go to the Cardinals? Just to help them out as a team, as a franchise? Anything? Any
you know,
reaction?
I think it's worth noting that the Cardinals redid their entire stadium without any state money.
It's a damn crime how little the state goes for the Cardinals.
So I don't know that they – I don't think they need our help with a tax increase.
Well, they don't need it, but they deserve it.
So does that mean the Chiefs also deserve it then?
I mean, does
that
make
sense? Yeah, I think that makes sense. A portion of that, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the state.
I'm not a big fan
neglect
of
the Cardinals.
No. Say, I'm pretty okay with that.
Well, there's all sorts of departments you could get rid of for and give that money to the Cardinals. I just think it's a damn crime how little the state does for the Cardinals. Becky, you've got like a not good look on your. That's not patriotic.
You know, the Cardinals are great. The Royals are great. The Chiefs are great. But I don't like taxes and I don't like government.
No passion.
The end.
I guess that's a good way to end the pie. Senator, thank you so much for hosting it. We really appreciate it.
Becky, eight questions with Senator Selby.
Eight questions, yes. We want to thank our sponsors for all eight questions, Republic Services and the San Luis Regional Chamber of Commerce. And we'll see you next week live from the State Capitol.